At this time, I'd like to thank you very much, Valerie, before I get to thank you for coming. At this time, I'd like to introduce our Al-Anon speaker, Elsa C. I've just met her briefly this afternoon. I think she's a very charming lady. I believe this lady has a real message to carry. And I hope you enjoy her. Elsa C.
I am Elsa, and I'm a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi.
Hi, Elsa.
Wasn't she great? I hate to follow an Al-Anon like that, because I had to say in the Al-Anon meeting today that I think sometimes these Al-Anon people are doing a better job with their program, our program, than we Al-Anons are with ours. I don't know. These kids have a way of grabbing and holding on to this program. And you and I, as parents, should take a real good look at this, I think. Can you all hear me? Okay. Because one of the things that we neglect, I think, those of us who, at least of my era, and I see it all around me today, we neglect our kids. There is no real family togetherness and warmth, except when you see a family where one is in Al-Anon, one is in AA, and one is in Al-Anon. And then, by George, do they ever get together. And it's a wonderful thing to watch. And I hope that you will make it your business to see to it that Al-Anon has a real good start in every part of this beautiful state of yours. But that's not what I'm up here for. I'm up here to talk about the Al-Anons. I'm up here to talk about me, of all things. The only time that anymore that I do too much self-thinking, I think, is when I have to talk at a thing of this nature. And I sometimes wish I didn't have to. And yet, the thing that makes this thing work is the sharing from one to another. The loving and the sharing is what makes this program tick. I'm an only child, and I think that's about six strikes against me to begin with. Is this thing playing back on me here?
Yeah, turn it down a little bit.
Turn it down just a little bit. Because when you grow up the only child in a family, I think you have a tendency to become a little bit selfish. And still, even though I was had it all, I grew up with a feeling of not being really worthy, terribly, terribly shy, and not having much of a belief in myself. But when I got into a good deal of dramatic work, I learned how to put up a front. And maybe some of you Al-Anons know a little bit about that. That very serene, sublime front. And I remember so well, one of our members who was speaking at our group not long ago said, I used to look at Elsa and wonder if she was as serene on the inside as she looked on the outside. And I had to go up and tell her afterwards that I definitely was not as serene on the inside as I looked on the outside. But this is a thing that I think many of us have difficulty with. But when I was very young and very naive and very, very, very innocent, I met a young man that a great many of you know. He was tall and he was handsome. In fact, I think he was the most beautiful man I'd ever laid eyes on in my life. And I fell desperately, hopelessly in love with this guy. And hopefully he did with me too. because this last June, we have 53 years of marriage, so he'd better. But that almost didn't come off, and I'll tell you why. We were finally married, and along the way we had two sons, and strangely enough, as far as we non-alcoholics are concerned, this man of mine could drink an awful lot and not show it in the beginning. I often say he had a hollow leg, but he was young and he was strong, and he was had been quite an athlete in his day, and it just plain didn't show. And I think this is true with a great many alcoholics. I don't know whether Chuck was an alcoholic from the first. I've never heard him say, but it certainly showed up later on. As time went on, of course, the thing that I have had to learn that I have no quarrel with whatsoever is that alcoholism is a progressive illness. Because I watched that illness progress over the years with my husband. And I guess I tried everything that any one of you has ever tried to show this man that he was drinking too much. And the only answer I ever got was, "Let me alone, baby. I know exactly what I'm doing." And he thought he did. I wonder sometimes how some of us can be so dumb. But you see, in my day, there was no answer to alcoholism. Alcoholics Anonymous came along much later than that. And when I tell you that none of us, nobody knew anything about alcoholism in that day, the psychiatrist didn't know, the doctors didn't know, nobody knew. And the only thing they could say was that he's got to pull himself up by his bootstraps. He's got to stand up and be a man. And that's all you ever heard. And only knowing this, naturally, I had absolutely no understanding of what was going on with my husband. Those of you who are in this program today don't know how lucky and how very, very fortunate you are to have a program ready-made for you that has come out of the many, many years of trial and error of learning, both in AA and Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. So we have the experience of many, many thousands of people, but there was nothing like this when Chuck was drinking so terribly. AA was very, very young when Chuck finally came. But during those drinking years, the mistakes I made, if I allowed myself to dwell on the things that I did that were wrong, I would be thoroughly miserable today. But thank God, that's one of the things this program teaches, that we leave the past behind. I no more recognize myself today in what I used to be than flying to the moon, because this program has done for me something that nothing else could possibly have done. But it took me a long, long time. Maybe some of you Al-Anons will recognize some of the feelings that I had during those drinking years. When you beg and you plead and you cry and you, as I often say, give them the beautiful silent treatment where you just won't talk to them for a week or two at length, you know. And there were times even when I cogitated in the back of my mind, isn't there some way that I could get rid of this guy and not get found out? When you are contemplating murder, it's not so hot, you know. It's not a very good thing. Something happens to those of us who live with alcoholism that is not very nice. Today, I think alcoholics have come to understand better what the families go through during the alcoholic years. I can remember so well in the beginning when Chuck first got sober, the AA members didn't have much use for us Al-Anonis. They thought we were a bunch of nincompoops, and they We couldn't possibly understand their program, so they never gave us very much time. But at any rate, as time went on, of course, the last 5 or 6 years of Chuck's drinking was the worst. He was trying every way that he knew how to do something about his drinking, but I don't think sobriety had anything really to do with it. I think he was just trying to cut down to the point where he didn't have to drink so much. But not having a great deal of inner strength myself, I was brought up in a religion, fortunately, that does not teach fear. And yet, I grew to know such terrible fear during those years because I had had no training to earn my own living. I was a good mother and housewife, and I had done a good deal of outside work, but I'd gotten to the age where I couldn't do much of that anymore. And as Chuck went downhill, I went downhill. And I became a complete and utter nothing, where I had no feeling of self-worth whatsoever. I think this happens to most of us who live with alcoholism. And my husband, being the type of person that he is, he's not only a big man, but he's an extremely strong man. And anybody that tells me that the alcoholic is weak, I say, pooh to that. They're not weak. They have a way of making us feel like stupid idiots for some reason or other when they're drinking. Not after that. They wouldn't do that after they got sober, would they? No way. But my husband happens to be one who had to go completely to the bottom before he could give up. And that last year, I think, was the worst of the worst. When he was drunk from the Friday before Christmas until the middle of January in 1943. And I think this was the drunk to end all drunks, because it ended him and it ended me. And I finally came to the point where I had to give up completely any necessity that this guy should sober up and fly right. And in looking back on that decision, I can see how completely necessary it is for those of us who live with alcoholics to completely let go of that necessity for them to come to AA and get sober. Because it seems as though, and I have watched this for many, many years with many, many people, that when the wife or the husband, whichever it happens to be that is the non-alcoholic, gives up that terrible necessity that her mate should get sober, and gets busy doing something about himself or herself, the alcoholic comes to AA and gets sober. It's the doggondest thing I ever saw. But I've watched it happen time and time and time again. As long as we are hanging on and trying to force the alcoholic to sober up, nothing seems to happen. So, in Al-Anon as well as in AA, giving up is the total answer. Giving up completely the necessity that we should have it the way we want it. And I started divorce proceedings, and I started the business school to try to learn some way to earn my own living. But it was only about 3 or 4 months after I had made this decision that Chuck came to AA. And he came to AA so completely out of everything. Everything was gone. Our money was gone, his health was gone, his sanity was gone, everything was gone. And it was the greatest time in the world to give up. He came to AA with such a terrific desire to find an answer for himself that he grabbed this program and ran with it. And in growing so fast on the program, he left me trailing way, way behind. And I think this happens often with many, many people, because the relief that he was sober was so great that I just heaved a sigh of relief and just sort of trotted along. I was his shadow for many, many years afterwards. I'm one of the slow ones, very, very slow. It took me a long, long time to find any answers for myself. I used the excuse that that was because there was no Al-Anon then. We had what we called wives groups in those days, because this was a long, long time ago. And we would sit in those wives groups because the AAs mostly had closed meetings and they wouldn't let us come. And so we would sit in those groups and tell each other how terrible it was that we had to be stuck with guys like that. And there were no men, of course, there were only women. And we would commiserate with each other and try little by little and to the best of our ability to do something with the 12 steps, but we really didn't know what we were doing. Then Lois Wilson came to the coast and suggested that she and Bill had been talking about the terrible necessity of the family of alcoholics to find some answers for themselves, and that they thought it was time that we started our own society using the same 12 steps and changing just one word. The word alcoholic became others. And from that time on, things began to gel a little bit and a little bit and a little bit. And it grew like Topsy by trial and error. And today we have a perfectly beautiful program. But during those 5 years before Lois came to the coast, I thought I was doing a whale of a job, because I was going to AA meetings with Chuck night after night after night after night and listening. And I had read the book, and I thought it was the most marvelous thing I'd ever read in my life for him. And I sat in those meetings for all of those 5 years, wanting to punch him every once in a while and say, "I hope you heard that." You know? I didn't dare punch him. If you knew my husband, you'd understand why. And loving it, loving every minute of it, but not having any idea that it applied to me. Because, you see, I had been such a good woman all my life. Such a good woman. Here I had held that family together. I had taken care of these two boys. I had become very busy in all of the outside work that was necessary in their school. I was even program chairman for the school and president of the PTA and all that kind of stuff. And I thought I was doing a real great job. And it never occurred to me that I needed this program, even after I started an Al-Anon meeting in my own home. Three of us were sitting together in the old 6300 Club in Los Angeles when Lois spoke that night. And we said to each other, "You know, Beverly Hills needs this very desperately. Let's start a meeting in Beverly Hills," which we proceeded to do in my home. And I ran that meeting for a long time. I think you can understand why. I'd been listening at AA for 5 years. I knew a lot about this program, you see. And the thing that I can see today is that it's awfully easy to see the other fellow's problem. And it's awfully easy to see the other fellow's answer. But believe me, it's something else again to turn around and take a real good look at yourself and find out what makes you tick, and why you're not as happy or as contented as you would like to be. After that meeting had been going for a number of years, and I was the grandma of the group, believe me, everybody depended on me, and I think I had a pretty good motive in starting that meeting. I started it to help you poor people, didn't I? There's nothing wrong with that motive. But then we sold our home in Beverly Hills and moved clear down the coast to Laguna Beach in California. We got a house high on a hill with a perfectly magnificent view where we looked down on the little town of Laguna and the ocean and Catalina Island and the home of our dreams, actually, that AA had made it possible for us to have. And I'm so delighted with this move that I can hardly stand it, and I'm very busy getting it fixed up. But I didn't count on the fact that my husband's business was still in Los Angeles. And maybe some of you know that he talks a great deal, and has for 33 years. Talks a great deal. I mean a great deal. And it never occurred to me that he wouldn't have time to come home for dinner as he had been used to doing when we lived in Beverly Hills. And here I sit in my dream house, most of the time all by myself. And there's no Al-Anon in Laguna. In fact, there's very little in Orange County, and Orange County is a pretty big county. There was one meeting in Santa Ana and one in Corona del Mar. And I didn't particularly like the meeting in Corona del Mar, so I didn't go very often. And I think all of you know exactly what happened to me. With all of my head knowledge and very little heart knowledge, I began to slip back into my old stinking thinking, and it didn't take me very long. And I began to put pressure on Chuck to slow down. I said to him many, many times, after all, you've been talking all these years. Isn't it time you slowed down and gave me a little more attention? And I have run into quite a few Al-Anons that feel that same way. And if there are any in this group who feel that way about their alcoholic mate, spending so much time in the AA program and in 12-step work and so forth, please give them a break. Give them a break. Because I think after I finish telling what happened to me, you will understand how necessary it is for us to give the alcoholic complete freedom in his work in AA. Complete freedom. Chuck tried. He could see that I was miserable, and he tried very hard to slow down. And he would say yes to one and no to a couple more. And after about 3 or 4 months of this, he got so uncomfortable he couldn't stand it. And finally, one night at the dinner table, in fact, it was Thanksgiving, and our kids were there, and he said at the end of dinner, I've got to say something, and I want you all to listen. He said, I've been trying to slow down my AA work so that your mother wouldn't be so lonely. But he said, I'm getting so uncomfortable, I can't stand it. He said, I owe this program my life. Without this, I am nothing. And I have to do what I have to do, and you will have to adjust yourself to it. Well, I wasn't very happy about that. I didn't like it very much. But I knew I was going to have to accept it because I know my husband. And when he makes his mind up to something, that's it. So Thanksgiving, you see, is something else again. But Christmas comes very shortly after that, doesn't it? And I found out not long before Christmas that my husband had accepted a date to talk on Christmas. And I think every wife here knows exactly what happened to me. I hit the ceiling, and I said, how dare you? How dare you make a date on Christmas? This is a family day. You don't have a right to make a date on Christmas. But if you know my husband, when he makes a date, he keeps it, unless he's too ill to go. So much against my will, I planned an early dinner, and the children were there. And the thing that makes me laugh today, and one of the things that I want to say something about before I go any farther, we non-alcoholic members of the family sometimes have a great deal of difficulty with a sense of humor. I'm surprised the AAs didn't know how. Because that's one of the things that has been more or less beaten out of us, is a sense of humor. But in looking back on this Christmas, I have to laugh. Because not too long after dinner, our kids all took off. They had places they wanted to go. They had open houses. They were young. And they had things they wanted to do. So they bade us goodbye and left. And we were left alone anyway. So I got dressed and went to the meeting with Chuck. And at that meeting, there were two very, very drunk winos that had just been pulled out from under the Santa Monica Pier. The following Christmas, he was asked to talk again. And I went a little more willingly this time, not much. And you can see that a whole year had passed and I hadn't grown at all to speak of. But I went with him to this meeting, and lo and behold, one of those winos was leading that meeting, and the other one read the steps. And they had been sober that entire year, they told us afterwards. And the funny part of it was that they said they could not remember one word that Chuck had said that night. They were too drunk. But the thing they did remember, and that impressed them, was that a husband and wife would leave their family on Christmas. It was that they said they could not remember one word that Chuck had said that night. They were too drunk. But the thing they did remember, and that impressed them, was that a husband and wife would leave their family on Christmas and come to share at an AA meeting. And for the first time in my life, I could see exactly what we have in this fellowship of ours, both in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen. We are in the business of saving lives. Both in all three programs, we are in the business of saving lives. And whatever my husband has to do in order to fulfill his commitment to this beautiful program, I have to leave him free to do. But then what about me? What am I going to do about me? And my youngest son gave me the answer. So simple. It's so stupid, it had never occurred to me. He said, "Mom, why don't you start another Al-Anon group?" Simple. Simple. I had no Al-Anon. Start one. Start one. Which I proceeded to do. And it took quite a little while for that group to grow, as all groups do that are started in a strange area where there is no Al-Anon. Two and three and one and two and maybe four and maybe three. And then all of a sudden it started to grow. And one of your people here that has moved here from Laguna and our area, she was one of the original members of that group that started on the hill. And today, that group has grown to the point where we no longer can meet in a home. We're too big. We have 50 and 60 people at that meeting every Monday noon. And it's one of the most beautiful meetings you ever heard tell of. But the thing that is important is that I started that group with a totally different motive. This time, I needed you. You didn't need me. And I needed you desperately because I was desperately miserable. Very lonely and feeling very, very, very sorry for me. For me, here I have this lovely home and this beautiful view and nothing else. Nothing else. Because I didn't know a soul in Laguna. Not a soul. And I don't make friends very easily on the outside. But that beautiful group has done for me what I could not do for myself. They have taught me how to take a real good look at me and find out why I felt like such a nothing, why I felt that I had to be Chuck's shadow and follow him around like a little puppy dog all the time, and never have a feeling of being an individual, of being a person. And I had to take a real good look at my motives. And believe me, that's the thing that we need to look at, I am sure. Not the every little bitty thing that we did along the way. I don't think that is necessary. But the motive is the thing. Why did you do it? Why did you feel that way? Why did you need to be a person who had a terrible, terrible need for approval and a ghastly fear of disapproval? These were some of the things that I found in myself. These were why I was never, never myself. I always had to be what I thought you wanted me to be. And I never was really sincere with this, even though I made a lot of friends and a lot of people told me they loved me. But you know that after sobriety, it took me years and years to get to feeling anything inside of me. And I've heard a lot of Al-Anon members say the same thing. To break that cold, cold, icy feeling down inside, to where when you said, I love you, I could then, with all sincerity, say I love you back and mean it. Took me a long, long time. Even after that group had started. And I was so wound up in this terrible need to be what I thought my public wanted me to be that I couldn't be me. And I remember so well, we were talking about it this evening, the first time that I was asked to give a little 10-minute talk before Chuck talked. This was years and years ago. And you know what I tried to do? I tried to write a talk that I thought you people would think was real great. And I tried and I tried and I tried and I couldn't get anything down on paper that I thought was sharp enough, smart enough, good enough that you would say, oh, isn't she wonderful? You know? And I finally ended up in tears, and I went to Chuck and I said, I can't do it. I just simply cannot do it. I'm scared to death. And he said, you know what's the matter with you, don't you? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, you want this. He said, you know your own story better than anybody. He said, if you can get up there and just say what's in your heart and not care what they think and just share to the best of your ability, you'll be all right. And it's the best advice that I ever got in my life. And that's the only thing that makes it possible for me to come and talk to a crowd like this and not have it be important that you like what I have to say. You've asked me to come and share, and I will share to the best of my ability. And I remember so well the thing that came out in the grapevine so many years ago and has been reprinted a number of times, and maybe you've read it, which says we wouldn't be so concerned about what other people think about us if we knew how seldom they do. It's fantastic. I had played with something that a very dear friend of ours had said many years ago on many occasions, but I never did really understand exactly what it meant until I had been in this kind of Al-Anon for some time. He said, if God had made two of us exactly alike, one of us would be unnecessary. Think about that, it'll kill you. Because so many of us try for so many, many years to be as good as or better than or like somebody else. And when it comes right down to brass tacks, we can't. The only thing we can do is just to be the best me that I can be with what little I have at the moment to the best of my ability and let the chips fall where they may. That's all I can do. So my growth has been rather slow. And when I look at some of you who have come in today, and you have a ready-made program for you, and you have lots and lots of people who can share with you and help you along the way, and watch you grow so fast, and look back on me and use the excuse sometimes that, it wasn't there for me for so many, many years, and it took me just that long to get where I am today. I think it's a cop-out myself, but that's the way it was. That's the way it was. I was slow. But I thank God. We've lived in Laguna Beach for 22 years now, and I count my growth from 22 years ago, because there wasn't any real growth from that time up until then. I wonder if there, I know there's some fairly new Al-Anons here. And one of the things, somebody in our Al-Anon meeting today used release with love. That started in Southern California. I was on the service board of the central office when that came into being, because we didn't particularly like the word that was used in our literature for letting go. And I can't think of the word right now. I know it as well as a gnomon. Detach. Because so many people got the wrong impression that detachment meant saying to hell with you, I'll do as I please, you know, which it doesn't mean at all. But it sounded kind of cold to us, a little bit cold. And so with much conversation and shooting the breeze back and forth with each other, we came up with release with love. And today I hear that all over the country, and I even heard it in England, believe it or not. So evidently there are other people that like the warmth of release with love. Because if we, even in letting go of the alcoholic, do not do so with love and with understanding of what they are going through and what their disease is, and that the alcoholic, who can be dead drunk, lying flat on the floor, unable to get up, is not what we see on the surface. That underneath all that crud is still God's child who does not want to be the way he is, but who is caught in the grip of something over which he or she has absolutely no control. And the only thing we can do then is look through that outer, ugly exterior and see God's child inside. Because I never have met an alcoholic who wanted to be the way he was when he was drinking. I never have. And when you and I, as non-alcoholics, can understand this, maybe we won't be having as many divorces as we see happening today among so many families. Because I do believe that if we, as non-alcoholic members of the family, can give the alcoholic that God-given privilege to find his or her answers in their own time, in their own way, because strangely enough, our timing is different, entirely different. It takes some a great deal longer. It took my husband longer than most. But I do have to say this, by George, when they do go to that length, they get well awful fast, believe me. And they hang on to this program with both hands and they run, as I said, with it. And it's a beautiful thing to watch. I asked the chairman of this meeting, If there were many people in this area that were having problems with their kids, and since there are some Alateens here too, I know that all over the country parents are having problems with their children. And I asked him if he thought it was wise for me to tell the story of my youngest son. And he said he thought possibly it might help somebody. So that's what I'm going to do. Because maybe it'll show some more of the things that I had to learn along the way. Now, my youngest son is not an alcoholic, thank God. He has never had a problem with booze, and he's never had a problem with all the other funny stuff that kids are taking today. But he had an alienation problem. And I think so many of us have had that problem in our families. Problem of complete alienation. As I told you, I have two sons. We have two sons. 6 years apart. Growing up, they were like Mutt and Jeff, you know. But now, they're almost the same height. They're both over 6 feet tall. But somehow or other, these two boys, as happens in so many, many families, were total opposites. I've never seen two kids so totally opposite. The older boy is very much like his father. He's a businessman and an athlete. The younger boy, I'm sorry to say, is a lot like his mama. His only interests are art, drama, and music. And Chuck, being the male guy that he is, couldn't understand this kid. Just simply couldn't understand him. He thought he had a weirdo. And he, I think, got the idea that he had a sissy on his hands. And some of the people that knew him thought so when he was a little guy, because he liked a lot of the things that boys don't usually like. And he used to put on shows for the neighborhood kids and whatnot, you know. But in growing up, Chuck, feeling the way he did about this boy and not knowing how to handle him, tore him down considerably and made fun of the things that he enjoyed doing. And he carried this into his older years, and when the boy finally grew up and went away to college and then went overseas in the war, he still felt the same way about him. And as those years went on, I could see this division coming about. I could converse with the kid, but I still had a definite feeling that this boy didn't even want me to put my hand on his shoulder. He had become a complete and utter loner. He wouldn't let anybody in his circle. He just shut everybody out. And when he came back from the war and decided that he had made up his mind, or gave us the word that he had made up his mind, that the theater was the thing that he wanted to go into, his father said, and this will kill you, it killed me at the time. He said, okay, you go on up there to Hollywood for about 3 months and we'll pay your way. And if you don't find something within 3 months, well, that's all, brother. You come on into the office with me. And I knew at the moment that that would never, never work. And it didn't. But this kid on his own, without any help from his family, except for that 3 months of paying his way, made it by himself. But during that time, we saw very, very little of him, and for many years thereafter. And it took until the boy was 30 years old before anything really happened. And the thing that is amusing to me is that when he became a star, my husband was all for him. And I'm afraid that's typical of fathers. Fathers have a terrible time with sons that don't walk the same path that they do, I'm sure. But the thing that happened was that after he had become successful, I got a phone call from him one night when I was sitting at home alone. Chuck was out talking as usual. And incidentally, I want to tell you right here that I have learned how to be alone and be happily alone and comfortable. And boy, that's quite a switch, because I thought I had to be with him every living minute, every living minute. But I got this call this night, and this kid was so angry that he was sputtering over the telephone. And strangely enough, this is the first time I had ever seen this boy angry. Because he was a lot like his mom. He pushed things down and pushed things down and pushed things down and would never let you know exactly how he felt inside. But this night, everything let go. And out on me, my head, came the darndest bunch of stuff you ever heard. I had given an interview to a magazine that he didn't like. And the anger at the interview was what triggered the whole thing. And I found out that night that he hated his father. He thought his father was a phony, that he was just a marvelous speaker who gave out with a bunch of stuff, and that he didn't mean a word that he said. And he didn't like me very well either, because he thought I was a nincompoop and a weakling to have sat there and put up with this guy for all these years. And he just went on and on and on. And he had me in tears finally, because I was shocked. I hadn't had any idea that he felt that badly toward both of us. And he said, "Mom, I guess I better come down and talk to you." And I said, "No, I don't think you better. I've got to think this thing out." And we hung up. And I went to bed before Chuck got home, because I didn't want him to see my swollen eyes, because I knew that if he knew what his son had said about him, it would destroy him. And I couldn't let him know. And so by morning, my swollen eyes had gone down and I looked fairly good. And I don't know how in the world I ever fooled Chuck as long as I did about how I felt about this thing, but I did. But my Al-Anon group knew, and I went down the next Monday to my meeting, and those gals took a look at me and they said, "What's the matter, Elsa? You're hurting." And I had to break down and tell them what had happened. And you know what that bunch said to me? "Why, Elsa, you told us this. Why, Elsa, you said that. You're not practicing what you preach." And they told it to me in no uncertain terms. And I had to again turn around and take a real good look at me and see what it was that was hurting so terribly. Naturally, it was my ego. I thought I was the mama of this beautiful boy and that he loved me and everything was fine. And then I find out that he can't stand either one of us. This is pretty hard medicine to swallow, believe me. But knowing that it would destroy Chuck, I never told him. But in the meantime, the thing that I had to do with the help of my group was to let go of the necessity for this boy to love me. I had to let go of the necessity for us to even be friends. I had to let go of the necessity for him to change his ways and grow as we had learned, thought we had learned to grow. I had to take him and put him lovingly in God's hands and start on myself to get rid of the hurt. And little by little by little, it went away with the help of my group. But when I say that you and I are very, very impatient people, both in AA and Al-Anon, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We want everything to happen yesterday. It took 3 more years before anything happened. And out of a clear blue sky, Chuck and I were sitting as we are wont to do in our living room, looking out through that big front window at the view and the sunset and the beautiful, beautiful shoreline. And out of a clear blue sky, he said to me, "I've got to go and make my amends to Dick." And I couldn't believe it. I almost fell out of my chair. And you know how he had found out that he needed to make amends to his son? Was because he was working with a number of young people who were having problems with their parents. And all of a sudden, it hit him like a ton of brick that he had exactly the same problem with his youngest son. And he went in and had dinner with the boy, and they sat there and laughed and cried in the middle of a big restaurant. And the funny part of it was that the minute that Chuck made his amends, the wall came down. That was all it took, was for Chuck to tell the boy that he had not realized what he had done to him all of these years, and to tell him how sorry he was. And then we had to go clear to England very shortly thereafter to get acquainted with our youngest son, and to watch him and watch his growth has been one of the most amazing things that I have ever seen, because he has little by little by little opened up to the point where he is letting people in his circle, and he is learning how to be friends with many, many other people. And the result is that he has become an even better actor each time that he has made one of these discoveries. And it was all started with a little program called AA and Al-Anon. It took time, yes, it took time. And it took a whale of a lot of hurting and a whale of a lot of learning. But isn't that what life is all about? How long it takes, and what it takes. But for a long time now, he comes to visit us down at Laguna, and he walks in that front door, and he does something today that he never used to dare to do. He grabs me around the waist and lifts me off my feet and kisses me right smack dab on the mouth and says, "I love you, Mom." And I could just die. It's one of the most beautiful things I've watched, the growing process of a young soul. And that's why Alateen is so very, very important with our young people, and why it's so terribly important that you and I as parents see what these young people need and give them the love and the understanding. And strangely enough, these kids like discipline. Don't think they don't. Because they think that without the discipline, you don't care. You don't care. And it's one of the most beautiful things I've watched, the changes in some of these families. There's something to be said about being around as long as I have been around, because I have seen so many miracles. So many, many miracles. But I think the greatest thing that you have taught me is how to love. I couldn't before. But today I can say with all the freedom in the world, I love you, every last one of you, AA, Al-Anons, and Alateens. And thank you so much for asking me to come. God bless.